Hi guys, my name is Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic. I don't know, four or five, something like that. We'll figure it out. We're gonna do something here. We're gonna do something. What is it? Five, four, whatever. We're gonna go through this whole thing. We won't necessarily take them in order, you know. Consistency is the hobgoblin of little minds. We'll do it cafeteria style. So I got some things I want to talk to you about, and it's good to be here. You know, I always talk about step three, so I'm gonna do a lot of step three. But you know, in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it says we're now on a new basis. That's what I like talking about the literature. I like talking about the big book. You know, the fellowship's great. I like the fellowship. Phil, you know, I used to like hanging. How many people were bar drinkers? How many people drank in a bar? It's like all the old guys. The young guys never. The young guys either don't want to raise their hands or they're just sort of hanging out. But us old, I drank in bars. And I liked hanging out with alcoholics in groups drinking in bars. You know, and alcoholics, you know, because we're lonely. You like hanging out with guys, drinking with guys or gals, whatever, in bars. You feel less lonely. I think it's the same thing with the fellowship, quite frankly. You know, that sort of idea of connecting with somebody, even if it's over coffee, whatever it is, just hanging out with people. I think the fellowship's real important. But I got to tell you, when it really started happening for me, as far as that new freedom, that new happiness, that rocket ship in the fourth dimension, that whole sort of thing that we're supposed to, the promises, the whole deal that everybody supposedly is in here for, the good stuff. When it started happening to me, it was less fellowship. It was more literature. It was more getting into the literature. Because, you know, this isn't exactly Well People's Anonymous. And you can get a lot of misinformation hanging around Alcoholics. Now listen, I don't want you to take I don't want you to take this the wrong way. You know, I just want you to let you know this. But in my opinion, I've been sober for a little over 34 years, and I've dealt with many, many alcoholics, sponsored a lot of people, and in my opinion, alcoholics are crazy. Alcoholics and addicts, just nuts. I talk to like 20 of them every day. They just call me up on the phone. They just call me up. They say, hi, this is Rob. You don't know me, but I was listening to you at the 101 Club. Can I ask you a question? They just start talking. You know, it doesn't matter. I'm in my law office, whatever. I talk to them if I have time. And so I talk to like 10 or 20 of them a day, you know. And every time I talk, I mean, I love alcoholics. I love talking to them. But we're certifiably nuts. I'm talking about without the booze, without the drugs, we're crazy. You know, one guy called me up from a detox today, and he said, I really need help. I'm in detox, you know, I'm detoxing from heroin, and I need some place to go after this. And I said, hey, no problem. I'm going to call up a buddy of mine. He's got a place down south. You know, where he brings in a lot of guys. I said, let me call him up. And in the detox that he's in, it's possible to go from there right to the place. You get like a free 3 hots and a cot. You know, it's a bunch of guys. It's really solid. It's a solid place. You know, 12-step, the whole bit, you know, really heavy onto the God thing, you know. And so he called me back, and I said, I'm not going to use his real name and say, Joe, I got you set up. I said, so-and-so is going to call up from this place. He's going to contact your social worker. They can send you down there, you know. He's going to make room for you. You understand? And, I mean, I don't know this guy from Adam. He called me up because I heard a tape or something like that. And I just want you to know I did that for you. I said, it's a great place. It's a 12-step place. Now, he's a heroin addict. He has no money. There's no place to go. It's a great place, 12-step place. Says they're very spiritually oriented, focused on the God thing. So he says to me, he says, thanks, but I'm not into that. We had a great conversation after that. I said, I know you're not into that. You're into copping heroin. You're into doing drugs. You're into ripping off people. You're into hurting people, disappointing people, stealing, robbing. That's what you're into, but you're not into that God stuff. I understand that. He said, no, I tried it, but it didn't work. I said, listen to me. Listen to me very closely. You never tried it in your life. You never tried it. You went to church one time or two times, you did this. You never tried it. I said, the only thing you tried is to get a fix. The only thing you ever tried was to get a fix. You know what he said? You know what he said? He said, you're right. He didn't even try to argue the point. He didn't even try to argue. But you know, the great thing about this disease we have is the first thing we say is, the first thing we do is tell ourselves lies. You know, they hear a guy who says, well, I tried that. I tried that. When you say it, it's like he almost believed it. And then I said, no, you didn't. And he said, you're right, I didn't. Well, there wasn't even a fight. He said, you're right, I didn't try it. But he said he tried it. You know, we just tell ourselves stories that are not true. You know, just all it takes is like one person to say, no, you never tried that. He says, yeah, I guess you're right, I never did. But we basically believe our own BS, our own stuff, and that's the deal. But again, then some gal called me up from a treatment. I mean, it's almost fun talking to him, but it's the same thing over and over again. It's not my fault. I'm not to blame. You don't understand. Yes, but if only, you know, it's more complicated than that. Because everything with alcoholics is complicated. You know, it's nothing simple. Do you have a license? Well, it's a long story. Are you married? Well, you know, it's like this, you know. You know, do you have a job? Well, sort of, you know. I mean, there's nothing black and white, nothing yes or no. Everything's got a three-page story behind it, you know. They never want to be pinned down because they never want to talk about the truth because they don't even know what the truth is. So, you know, I spent 8 years on Relay. And anybody know what Relay is? Relay is I was every Friday night in Dade County. Every Friday night in Dade County, between the hours of 8 at night and like 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock the next morning, if you called up Dade County for 8 years, you called up Dade County, 3 o'clock in the morning, you were drunk, called up Alcoholics Anonymous in Dade County, you got me. Which is why nobody got sober during that 8-year period of time. You want to learn about how to talk to alcoholics and how alcoholics think and what alcoholics are and about alcoholic selfishness and about the dementia and, you know, what's going on with that? You just talk to alcoholics for 8 years every Friday night between 8 at night and 8 in the morning. You'll find out really fast what the story is, you know. And I had one gal call me up and said, she said, well, you know, I'm a professor, and I went through all the programs and everything like that, and I've been sober for a year. I went to AA for a little while, and I've been sober for a year, but I started drinking again. And he says, so I need some help because I'm worried about losing my job and losing my kid and everything like that. He says, so I want to talk to you. He says, but the one thing I don't want you to talk to me about is Alcoholics Anonymous. This is a professor. This is an alcoholic professor. Sober when she called me up. And I said, well, listen. I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm 7-8 years sober, whatever I was sober, because I go to Alcoholics Anonymous. And by the way, you called Alcoholics Anonymous. So you understand, if you're looking for like plan B, I don't got a plan B, because I'd be doing it. This is what I do, so that dog just ain't gonna hunt, you know what I mean? But these are alcoholics. This is crap brilliant alcoholics say. This is the mind of an alcoholic who's a professor, who's sober, who's been through the program. I mean, we're insane. We say insane, and I got millions of them, you know, because I can't even tell you how many of these things I have. So in the big book, it says something like this. It says, I don't have a big book, but I pretty much know paraphrase of what it said. It says, we're now on a new basis, the basis of trusting in God. We're on a new basis, the basis of trusting in God. Now, not everybody's on that basis. A lot of guys in here just sort of floating around, they're dilettantes, they're checking out the deal, and they're hanging out until they can tunnel out of here and get a gal or whatever it is they're looking for. But some of us get on that new basis, the basis of trusting in God. As a matter of fact, later on in the book it says, first of all, we have to quit playing God. He says, when we made this decision sincerely, took a sincere decision that we're going to trust in God, all sorts of remarkable things followed. Now, this is not me. This is not my opinion, although it is my opinion, because after 34 years, I've grown to think along the lines of the big book. I mean, I've come to believe, you know it says in the big book, we're alcoholics and we can't manage our own lives. No human power can relieve their alcoholism. only God could and would if he was sought. And then right after that it says being convinced. Being convinced, we are now at step three. You know, so after about 20 years of doing this and getting pounded and getting hurt and falling down, somewhere along the line, then around 20 years, 22 years, I became convinced. You know, I told my sponsor, I said, I know what this is, you're brainwashing me. He said, maybe your brain needs washing. And the truth of the matter is, for some of us, guys like me, hardheads like me, that want to do the same thing over and over again, expecting different results, sometimes a little talk like this, or going to a few meetings, or holding hands and saying kumbaya, or saying the Lord's Prayer, sometimes that just doesn't work. Sometimes you just have to, you know, get arrested a few more times. Sometimes you just have to, you know, I mean, bad crap has to happen to you. Sometimes you just have to live life with your own brain, doing it your own way, and get slapped down a couple of times. That's how we say we get a new perspective, by a thousand forms of humiliation, the final crushing of ourselves. So sometimes you just got to get in a position where you surrender over and over and over again. Some people just need to be arrested sober. Some people need to have 5 years sobriety and need to be arrested and go away for a year or two. You know, some people need to have real problems while they're sober to just prove to them that they are powerless and they're not big shots. And you know, some, there is a power greater than themselves, and their life needs to get more unmanageable while they're sober. You know, to prove that this is a serious disease and they got serious problems. You know, I mean, sometimes that just needs to happen to people. And that's what happened to me. You know, what happens to you is you go through life, you read these books, you go to the meetings, all this stuff happens. It sort of sounds nice. It's a nice way to bide your time, listen to people, but you don't necessarily buy the whole, you're not convinced. You're not totally convinced, okay? Because you're like me, you want to run your life, you want to do your thing, you're focused on different things. And over a period of 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, you become slowly, slowly convinced that this stuff is serious. And so in the big book it says, and after a while, you don't see it as, you don't see this as it's happening to you. A lot of the things that I know now for sure, I sort of see in retrospect. I mean, stuff that should have been clear to me as I was going through it, I didn't understand it, but looking back, I see what the deal is. And in the big book it says, once we make this decision, all sorts of remarkable things happen, the decision for God. Being all powerful, he gives us everything we need if we stay close to him and perform his work well. And then it says, if we do that, stay close to him and perform his work well, stay close to him and perform his work well. So all you got to do is stay close to him and perform his work well. So all you got to do is know who he is and what work he has for you to perform. That's all you need to know, who he is and what work he has for you to perform. That's what the big book says. As we stay close to him and perform his work, he gives all sorts of remarkable things happen. He says, number one, you're going to start losing concerns for your own little plans and designs. You're going to stop thinking about yourself. Now, for some people, when they told, I could not, how many people used to, are alkies here? Used to, anybody here ever have a problem where you couldn't stop drinking? Raise your hand if you had a problem where you couldn't stop drinking. Okay. Now listen, I had that problem, okay? Now listen, when you have a problem where you can't stop drinking, now you all alcoholics, really? Okay, we're going to see. We're going to do a test. Because I am an alcoholic, you know what I mean? I don't know about you guys. I mean, you're in an AA meeting, but who knows? Maybe you got nothing to do tonight. So here's the deal. I was an alcoholic, so I know how alcoholics think, because I'm a real alcoholic. When you're an alcoholic and you can't stop drinking, this is the deal. You can't envision a life without drinking. You can't envision a life without drinking. You can't even imagine a life without drinking. It's like, well, if I don't drink, what am I going to do? I mean, you can't even, is that right? Anybody, you know, like a man, as a matter of fact, you got to say to them, we do it one day at a time, but because they can't even imagine 2 days. You know what I mean? Let alone a week, you know, let alone a year. They hear somebody like me with 34 years, they say, that guy, I don't know what he is, but he ain't an alcoholic. You know, they can't even imagine life without drinking. They don't even realize, well, yeah, before the age of 10, I didn't drink. You know what I mean? They don't even remember that there was a time that they didn't drink, right? Well, when you say to people that you lose all concerns about your own little plans and designs, you stop thinking about yourself. You stop thinking about yourself. There are some alcoholics in here that don't have any idea what the hell I'm talking about. because they've never been able to stop thinking about themselves. They've never had a time in their life that they stopped thinking about themselves. The only time they stop thinking about themselves is when they're in a car and the radio's blasting or they're high or something like that, and they're concentrating on the music, and even then they're thinking about themselves. They're thinking about themselves singing the song. They just cannot get out of their own head. They can't even imagine what life would be like. Well, if I wasn't thinking about myself, what would I think about? What am I gonna think about if I, why would I think about anything else but myself? They don't know what life would be like not thinking about it. It says we start being concerned with other people. You actually start being concerned with other people. You know, it's an amazing life when you're concerned about other people. First of all, let me trust me on this. There's a lot of people to be concerned about. There's a lot of people that need help. And you start being concerned with other people, and there's a lot of people that you can help out there. And it's a great life when you're concerned about people and you want to love on people and you want to help. You'd be amazed at how many people you can help out there during the day. They just, I don't know what it is. They just, you're like a magnet. They just like flock to you. They start talking to you. And somehow you know how to say the right thing. You know, things that used to baffle, you know exactly what to say to them. You know, you stop losing concern for yourself, your little plans and designs. Start seeing where you can help other people. You have a God consciousness. Can you imagine that? A God consciousness. Instead of feeling alone all the time, feeling lonely all the time, feeling like, I mean, you know, I don't know about you, but I used to drink in a bar. You know, the more people in the bar, the lonelier I felt. I mean, I got to a point where I couldn't even drink it. I had to drink by myself. I mean, you know, you could actually, if you're an alcoholic, you could be in a stadium full of people and feel like you're completely removed from there, like you're on the planet. You could be in a stadium of people and feel like you're on the planet Venus, that nobody understands you. You know, that's part of being an alcoholic. I mean, to not feel that feeling of loneliness and emptiness, you'll lose fear of today, yesterday, and tomorrow you're reborn. That's what the book says. This is all big book stuff. Now, I happen to know, because I experienced in my life, that all this is true. Now, of course, if you're an alcoholic and you're basically a cynic, and it's all bullshit. You know, that's what alcoholics are. You know, the alcoholics say, you know, they don't want to believe that anything good could happen. It's all bad. You know, too good to be, that's too good to be true. That's a bunch of, there's nothing too bad. Oh, it's bad. It must be true. It's too good to be true. You know, you'll be sitting in the back room and say, that guy's full of crap. Well, that's only because they've never experienced it. They've never experienced a life where they're not restless, irritable, and discontent. They've never experienced a life where they can't go for 5 seconds without having all sorts of crap on their brain. All sorts of bad thoughts about themselves and other people. So I can understand that deal. I get that deal. But let me tell you why it's so important, why the God thing for me is so important. I want to try to put it in a way that's the truth. I want to sincerely sort of tell you guys the truth about in my own life. It's so infused in my life. I'm so focused on it now. And the book, it's so important. The reason why the book talks about God, about making a decision for God, about clearing all the obstacles to God, you know, the sunshine of the spirit, you can do the 4th step to God. While once you get to the 11th step, while you try to get, the reason why it even encourages church membership, hang around with people that are talking about God, the reason why it is because it's the 100% major thing that's important for happiness, for having happy sobriety. It says, see to it your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. And let me give you one small truthful example as to how it works in my life. And believe me, I'm an alcoholic. I am an alcoholic. You know what that means? I'm selfish. I'm self-centered. I'm driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking. I step on the toes of others and they retaliate similarly without provocation. You know, I don't think I have a problem. You know, I'm self-aware and right, though I usually don't think so. The book says, above everything, I must get rid of this selfishness. Let me tell you something. I'm an alcoholic. That's my nature. I'm 34 years sober. I've been working this thing hard. It's still my nature. Given my default, it's my default position. It's like being right-handed. I'll never get rid of it. It's like being right-handed, you know? I could train with my left hand, use my hand. The bottom line is, I just feel comfortable being selfish. I feel comfortable being selfish. I just feel, I feel comfortable blaming other people. I feel comfortable feeling sorry for myself. Feeling I can do sorry for myself. I'm a self-pityaholic. Let me tell you something. I can be sorry for myself with booze or without booze. I can feel sorry for myself at the drop of my hat. I can feel sorry for myself for crap that happens that has nothing to do with me. I mean, stuff could happen on the what happened in Nepal? They had a big earthquake. I can think of the earthquake and start feeling sorry for myself. You know what I mean? Anything that happens in this world, it's all about me and there's some wrong. I can say, this crappy world, I can't believe. I can run with feeling sorry for myself. Every bad thought, every bad emotion, every bad thing that's going on with me, I feel comfortable. Good stuff, thinking good stuff about people, about things is difficult for me. So I got to train myself. I got to be in training all the time, like a professional boxer. You know, I got to say, the Christian line is, put on the full armor of God every day, because the devil's out there, he's going to grab you. You know what I mean? Because it's true for somebody like me. I let down my God one time. What does it say? We rest on our laurels. You know what I mean? And we're going to fall. It says, we rest on our laurels. That's what it says in the big book, and that we fall. Every day we got to bring this into our life. So why is that? I live about 45 miles south of here. I live 45 miles south of here. It takes me in rush hour traffic about an hour or so to get up here. And I worked a full day today. So I went home and I sat down in my easy chair, this big old easy chair. At around 4 o'clock in the afternoon, I put my feet up. I turned on the TV, my wife is in bed, and I immediately fell asleep. 3:30, I fell asleep. I knew I had to be here. And it's pouring outside. And I'm 45 miles away from this place. I got 34 years sobriety. And I'm obligated, I made an obligation, I'm gonna be here. And James calls me up on the phone, and get this, I'm sitting there, and I start thinking about the drive in the rain during rush hour traffic, because I have to leave at 5 o'clock, there's 5:30 in the afternoon, in rush hour traffic. I don't know how you guys got here. I drove an hour in rush hour traffic to get here. Bumper to bumper traffic on the turnpike, which is kind of interesting. You know what I mean? And nobody's driving me, I'm driving myself after a full day's work. And I'm sitting there in my easy chair, and I'm tired, and I'm sleeping, I'm snoozing. I mean, I go to sleep, believe me, at the drop of a hat. And I start thinking about the rain, and I'm tired, and I'm sort of like toying up with the idea of, I don't know, it just sort of flashed across my mind that considering the rain and it's 45 miles away and you know, maybe I could make an excuse for get somebody else to do it or call up somebody. And then, you ready for this? Then James calls me up from New York. From New York! James, you're a fearless leader, the guy who runs this thing. And he says to me this, in the midst of this, and I'm dead tired. And I'm staring at the TV set, thinking about this stuff, and all of a sudden James said to me, he says, I'm calling you up, I just want to let you know, I won't be there. I won't be, the guy who invited me to come up 45 miles, you know what I mean? He says, I just want to let you know, I won't be there tonight. Now, I'm an alcoholic. You understand what I'm saying? Let me tell you something. I'm an alcoholic. You know what that means? That means the chances, as an alcoholic, the chances of me showing up are slim and none, and slim's left town. You understand what I'm saying? I get every reason in the world not to be here. You know, I'm 45 miles away, it's pouring rain, it's rush hour traffic, I'm dead tired, you know what I mean? You guys don't want to listen to me anyway, you know? You'll find somebody else. And the guy who invited me, he ain't showing up. But I'm here. You see, the problem with being an alcoholic is this. You give in to all those selfish urges. The problem with giving an alcoholic is not only can't you stop drinking, you can't stop thinking selfishly. You see, the problem with being an alcoholic is before I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, when I had to be somewhere, even if I was sober, and the thought came to me that I was too tired, you know, or anything like that, I would always go with the urge. I would always end up doing, you know how they say do the next right thing? I would just do the next thing I thought was right. You understand what I'm saying? And I was the guy who decided whether it was right or not. You know, I remember one time I was, and let me tell you how deceiving this disease is. I remember one time I was lying in bed. I had about 2 months sobriety. You know how they say meeting makers make it? and you miss meetings and you might drink again. And I had been hearing that stuff, and I had 2 months sobriety. And it was just like today. I had 2 months, and I was lying in bed, and I was tired, and it was right after me. And my sponsor would always come over at around 7 o'clock and pick me up, and we'd go out to dinner, and then we'd go to a meeting. And it was like 5 o'clock, and I was tired. I had about 2 months, and I was watching an old rerun of Star Trek, and one that I had seen about 10 times already. And I started getting into that Star Trek movie, you know what I mean, and watching James Kirk and everything like that. And I started realizing, I said, any second now, my sponsor was going to come by and pick me up. He was going to pick me up and take me to the meeting. And I started thinking how I really didn't want to go to the meeting because I was tired. I was tired. You ever sit down and say, well, you should go to a meeting, but you're kind of tired. Maybe you'll stay in. I said, I was kind of tired. And the more I watched the movie, the more I got into the Star Trek deal, the Star Trek therapy, the Star Trek program, the more tired I got, the more tired I got. And then after a while, I couldn't swallow. You know, I started feeling like, you know how your glands swell up? You know, sometimes when you get a virus or like mononucleosis, I started feeling my glands swelling up. Like I started getting a sore throat. And I was going like this, and I said, and then I realized, really, I am sick. No, I mean, I really was sick. Something came upon me, some sort of sickness came upon me, and I started saying, you know, I'm really sick tonight. And I know, and Bob's gonna call me up and go to the meetings, but I'm really not feeling well. And the phone rang, and it was Bob. It was my sponsor, Bob, on the phone. And he said, well, Russ, where do you want to eat tonight? I said, well, Bob, I'm really not feeling well. I said, I think I'm coming down with mononucleosis or something. And he said, and this is what he said to me. He said, like my talking to the heroin guy, you know what I mean? Because I was in that heroin kind of mode that he was in, the bullshit mode, but I didn't know it. Because this, I'm not feeling well. And he said, you know, Russ, when you start making excuses for missing meetings, maybe you're thinking in the back of your mind it's okay to drink again. And you know what happened? The mono cleared up. It just cleared up. It just went away. It just went away. How did he know I wasn't sick? Who the hell is he? What is he, a doctor or something? The mono went away. I went out. We went to dinner, and everything was okay. So as I'm sitting there, but you see, here's the problem. What happens when you don't have, what would have happened to me if my sponsor didn't call up? You know what would have happened to me? I would have missed that meeting. It would have been a good excuse, and I would have missed the meeting, what I thought was a good excuse, because I'm not feeling well. And then you know what would have happened the next day, or maybe 2 days later? I would have missed another meeting, because of some other reason, which I didn't think was a big deal. And then you know what would have happened? One day, 2 or 3 weeks down the road, I'd be drinking again, and I'd be showing up at a meeting, picking up another white chip, talking about how I stopped going to meetings, and that's why it happened, but this time I'm gonna do it different. And then I would have done the same thing over and over and over again, because, you ready for this? I'm crazy. I'm mentally ill. I'm powerless over my own thoughts. I don't have the ability to fight the urges. If I'm tired and I say to myself, I can't go to a meeting because I'm too tired. I don't have the ability to fight that. I don't have the willpower to do that. If I say, I think I'm coming down with mono, so it's okay not to go, then I am coming down with mono. I've got stage 4 cancer. I will somehow, in my mind, believe, that's just the kind of disease I have. So I'm sitting there tonight, and this guy's called, James called me up. He says, I'm not going to be there. I'm 45 miles away. It's pouring down rain. You know what I mean? I'm tired as hell. It's like I was when I was, and no sponsor has called me up saying, well, when you start making excuses for not going to meetings, maybe you're gonna, nobody's doing that to me. I'm just sitting there on my easy chair. But you see, the difference is, I started thinking about God. You know, and I don't even have to think, I don't even have to go that far. It happens to me right away. You know what I start thinking about? I think about, you know what it says? It says, we stay close to him and perform his work well. we stay close to him and perform his work well. And if you never get out of the focus of staying close to him and perform his work well, even when those crazy alcoholic thoughts come to you, well, I'm too tired, I'm too this, you're programmed. Man, I'll tell you, your brain, it's like my sponsor said, they brainwashed me. I'm screwed. They brainwashed me. Because I start thinking about staying close to him and what he wants me to do and performing his work well, and I know he wants me to come up here and fulfill my responsibilities. So somehow I get some sort of credit for being up here or doing all that stuff or look at all the stuff you do when I don't deserve the credit, because if it was up to me, I'd be lying in my lounge chair right now sleeping. I wouldn't even be doing this stuff. All credit goes to him. If I didn't have God in my life, if I didn't have God in my life, and therefore, if you don't have God in my life, hey, if you don't have God in your life, then who's God? Moi, I'm the God. I'm God. I make the decisions. I don't think about what God wants me to do, what my higher power wants me to do. I start thinking, what do I want to do? And I start saying, what do I want to do? Well, it's not what I want to do. I got mononucleosis. I can't go to the meeting. I start thinking about how I got mono, how I'm sick. I'll infect those people. I come up with all sorts of crazy stuff. Now, you guys are probably not, I'm looking at you pretty, you're probably not like crazy alcoholics like me. Your minds probably don't work crazy shit like that. You know what I mean? But that's the way my mind is. That's the way I am. So that's why it's very important for me to focus on God and who he is and what he is, because somehow when I focus on him, I always come up with the right answer and I always do the right thing. Now, the truth is, and this is the unfortunate truth, because I've seen this after 34 years, most people won't get that deal. They'll just think they're too cool, too special, too smart, too hip, slick, and cool, and they won't get it. And they'll end up drinking again. They'll never get this thing. Many are called, but few are chosen. But some will. Some will. Some will get this thing. So rarely have I seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. So on page 101 of the Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, I was just talking to somebody who was at the 101 group. It's the 101 group, page 101. I was at the 101, every Friday night I do something at the 101 group. And I read this at the 101 group last Friday. I'll probably read it again. I like reading this stuff, you know, because it's conference approved, you know. It says, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. So in 1939, yeah, I'll repeat this over again for 12 weeks. You know, if you repeat it over again for 12 weeks, maybe somebody will remember it. Maybe they'll remember it, you know what I mean? Alcoholics need repetition. I have no apology for repetition. Alcoholics need repetition. I mean, we say the same thing. We say the Lord's Prayer at the end of the meeting. We say the Serenity Prayer at the beginning of the meeting. We just repeat ourselves. We need repetition because this is a dangerous disease. I need this thing burned into my mind so I know when I'm off the beam, because my mind will take me out there. So they said, rarely have I seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path in 1939. That's when the big book was written, 1939. And their path, and they started AA in 1935. So between 1935 and 1939, they had a path. Most people think they know what the path was. They think the path has something to do with, you know, the wisdom of the rooms and what the rooms are telling them. But the path is pretty much mapped out in the literature. Until you get into the literature, you really won't know what the path is. You'll only be guessing at the path. Now, the great thing is about our deal, whether it's good or bad, it's the truth. You can, even though they say half measures avail us nothing, you could pretty much half measure this thing. You could be almost, not quite, sort of, good enough for government work, half measure this thing, probably stay sober for 3 or 4, maybe 10 years. We were just talking, you stayed sober for 11 years, right? And then you drank again. You could sort of half measure this stuff. There are guys that half measure this stuff, stay sober for 15, 20 years. And then one day they drink, or they don't get everything that these guys got, but they'll pick up the medallions. They'll pick up the medallions, you know what I mean? They may not be able to have a decent relationship with another human being. You know, they may not be able to, you know, they may be working on their 18th divorce. They may be chasing skirts around here. They may have all sorts of problems. They may not be being rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence, but they can stay away from the booze. You understand what I'm saying? Which really is what we focus on here. Not really the spiritual stuff. They can do that and pick up the medallion. You know, don't drink unless your ass falls off. But these guys that were being rocketed in the fourth dimension, they were doing it a different way. And this is what it says in page 101 of the Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers. It says, on the other hand, we were taking them upstairs and getting them on their knees to surrender which I felt was very important. This is Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers. This is conference approved. This is what they were doing in 1935, 36, 37, 38. When they say rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed up. You guys know what the word thoroughly means, don't you? You know what the word thoroughly means. Well, I'll put it to you. Listen, this is just, I'm just going to throw this out there. If between 1935 and 1939, they told you you had to get on your knees and give your life to God in order to go to a meeting. You understand what I'm saying? If that's what they did, that's not the same thing as picking up a white chip. Hello, did you hear me? I mean, am I off the beam on this? I mean, if in order to go to a meeting, even get into the meeting, you had to get on your knees in front of a bunch of men and give your life to God, which pretty much wraps up the second and third step right there. You know what I mean? You don't have to worry about that deal. Okay. That is different than, does anybody want to pick up a white chip? Would you agree with that? So does anybody want to pick up a white chip is not really what they were doing. If they were doing something different, right? It's not the thorough thing. Now, am I saying that we have to do that? No, but just recognize the fact, for whatever it's worth, that all these great promises they're making about what's going to happen to you and being rocketed in the fourth dimension, all this great stuff they're saying, that just recognize the fact that they were doing that what they were doing in order to get there may actually be something different than what they're doing in AA right now. You know why we do it the way we do it in AA now? The way we do it? You know why? Ready for this? Because it's not so uncomfortable. Besides, if we did it the way they did it, we might piss somebody off. You know, alcoholics are sensitive. We might hurt somebody's feelings. Well, that's a good reason, you know, not to do it thoroughly, right? You might hurt somebody's feelings. You might piss somebody off. They may tell you to go screw yourself. They may say something like, whatever you do, just don't talk to me about Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, that's a good reason. Just sort of pander to the alcoholic mentality. So, you know, because we're love and tolerance is our code and all that sort of stuff, which may or may not work. But the bottom line is some people get it and some people die. Some people make it and some people don't. So here's what they were doing in 1938, 39. On the other hand, we were taking them upstairs and getting them on their knees to surrender, which I felt was very important, a very important part. The surrender was more than important. It was a must. It was a must. They say, well, you have your program, I have my program. It was a must. You had to do it. Bobby, who came into AA in February of 1937, recall that after 5 or 6 days in the hospital, when you had indicated that you were serious, they told you to get down on your knees by the bed and say a prayer to God, admitting that you were powerless over alcohol and your life was unmanageable. This guy calls me up today. He's in the hospital. He's in detox. He wants to get out. He wants to go someplace. I find him a place. He says, I'm not into the God thing. I don't think he would have gotten down on his knees. Or maybe he would have if he was desperate enough. I mean, these guys were serious. I mean, you think I'm wacky? You think I'm crazy? Guys say, oh, if I was only sponsored by Bill Wilson or Dr. Bob. I don't think so. Oh, man, if I only had a good sponsor like Dr. Bob. Really? Really, you think? Furthermore, you had to state you believed in a higher power who would return you to sanity. There you can see the beginning of the 12 steps, he said. We called that the surrender. They had a name for it. They called it the surrender. Now, the truth is, we actually still have it here. It's sort of like watered down, but we have the surrender here. You know, we have, you know, the white chip. That's how I did it. You know, that's a form of surrender. I mean, let me tell you something. I remember sitting in the back of the room, and they said, does anybody want a white chip? It's a humbling experience, you know, when you're a big shot. To stand up in front of 40, 50, 100 people and walk to the front of the room and pick up a white chip, it's almost like you're saying, I need help. I mean, who the hell wants to say? It's almost like you're saying, when I come to think about it, I just did it without even thinking. I just stood up because I wanted help so badly. It is a humbling. You want to know something? I was probably at my, as far as humility is concerned, and believe me, I'm not a humble person. You can tell that. As far as humility is concerned, I was probably at my best the day, the day I picked up my white chip. The day I stood up in front of a group of people from the back of the room at 31 years of age and walked up and picked up a white chip without even thinking, basically pronouncing the fact that I needed help, that I was the newest guy in the room. I was probably at my best. I've been fighting to get back to that state of mind for 34 years. Really. I was at my best when I was, at my weakest. You know, in the Bible it says, there's a great line with the Apostle Paul with the thorn in his flesh. He says, to keep you from becoming conceited, I gave you a thorn in your flesh. He says, I won't take it away from you. He says, when you're weak, I'm strong. When an alcoholic is weakened, in a weakened state, that's the time when God is the strongest. As soon as you give him money, a car, a gal, it's like, get out of my way. You don't know what you're talking about. There you can see the beginning of the 12 steps, he said. We called that the surrender. They demanded it. You couldn't go to a meeting until you did it. If by accident you didn't make it in the hospital, you had to make it in the upstairs bedroom over the Williamson's house. That's where they met, in the Williamson's house. Dorothy S.M. recalled the 1937 meetings when the men would all disappear upstairs and all the women would be nervous and worried about what was going on. After about half an hour or so, down would come the new man. Shaking, white, serious, and grim. And all the people who were already in AA would come trooping down after him. They were pretty reluctant to talk about what had happened, but after a while they would tell us they had a real surrender. They had a real surrender. I often wonder how many people that come in now would survive an experience like that. A regular old-fashioned prayer meeting, said Dorothy, who was then married to an AA member, Clarence S., and later came into AA herself. I don't know. I wonder how many of us would have survived that. The meetings must have been a little bit different, don't you think, back then? It must have been different. You know, if in order to get into a meeting, it's sort of like a qualifier, wouldn't you say? It's a qualifier. You got to be pretty dead to get on your knees in front of a group of men, a group of whatever it is, and to say that prayer, and you're an alcoholic. They're as alcoholic as we are. To have to do that to get in the meeting, you got to really want to get into that meeting. I'll bet in those meetings where they got down on their knees, I'll bet there was not a lot of chatter going on, you know, between people. I'll bet they paid attention. I'll bet in those meetings they were probably more serious than a lot of the meetings we go to now. I'll bet there was probably less whining and crying. I'll bet they paid attention. I'll bet in those meetings, what do you think? I'll bet in those meetings where they had to get down on their knees beforehand and say a prayer to God, I'll bet in their meetings there were not a lot of people putting down the church. They probably didn't have a lot of people saying I'm an atheist or I'm an agnostic. What do you think? I don't know. What do you think? What do you think those meetings were like? What do you think those meetings were like? They were probably different, don't you think? Nowadays, you know, if you had one of those meetings, they want to shoot you. They want to shoot you. Try one of them meetings. You even talk about this stuff. They want to say, well, that's not conference approved. In this same book, you know, they say the books that they found absolutely essential was 1 Corinthians 13, the Sermon on the Mount, and the book of James. Nowadays in AA, if you quote any of those books, which I do liberally all the time, you know, they want to shoot you. They want to say, what's that? That's not AA. That's totally AA. That's the real AA. 1935 to 1939 AA, that's the real deal. You want the industrial strength stuff? You want the industrial strength sobriety? Or do you want the thumb-sucking crybaby sobriety? I mean, which sobriety do you want? I mean, what do you want? You want the sobriety that's good until something goes bad, and then you're sucking your thumb and being pissed off and feeling sorry for yourself? I mean, what do you want to be? You want to be the sixth step. It says this is the step that separates the men from the boys. Do you want to be a boy? Do you want to be the man? Do you want to be a woman? Do you want to be a girl? It says the test of being a man is that person who's repeatedly trying to do these things so he can grow in the image and likeness of his creator. That's what the sixth step says. That's conference approved. Do you want to grow in the image and likeness of your creator? Or do you want to sit around sucking your thumb and saying, I can't believe that guy's talking about God? Do you want to do the real program of Alcoholics Anonymous? Or do you want to do the stuff that you're hearing in the rooms? You know? I mean, what do you want to do? You want to just treat this like a bar, except you're drinking coffee? Sitting around talking bullshit? Or you want to talk about the real thing? I don't know. Listen, I'm just the guy talking. You know, there'll be another guy coming along at another meeting, he'll say this is all bullshit. You got your choice as to who you... Hey, this is the great thing about this deal. Nobody has to follow or believe anybody. It says this. If you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. So what happens is you come in here, like I came in here, and you get to see the whole AA zoo. You get to look the entire zoo. You see the zebras, you see the elephants, you see the monkeys, you see the whole deal. You see the guys that keep on slipping and sliding, and you see the leaders. Well, not everybody sees the leaders. Some people don't see anything. Some people are blind. They don't even see that there's a difference. You see the leaders, because in AA there are leaders. Did you know that? You know that, don't you? You know, I know you think, no, there's no leaders. We're all, you know, no, there's leaders. You know why I know there's leaders? Because in the tradition says our leaders are but trusted servants. It talks about leaders. It says our leaders are trusted. You can always tell a leader, they serve. They serve. They go out of the leaders are the ones that go out of their way, drive the miles, do the deal, do whatever they got to do in order to serve the greater cause. The followers are sitting in the back of the room talking shit, thinking crap, whining and crying, complaining at meetings, saying this thing ain't working for me. You know, they can't stop fidgeting. That's okay. They can turn into leaders. They can turn it. That's the whole point of this deal. The whole point of this deal is to grow up and mature, become a healthy human being. You know, it doesn't mean, you know, listen, you know, I was like a thumb-sucking crybaby for probably 15 years. I was a thumb-sucking crybaby and doing the steps, doing step series, you know? Yeah, I'd like to think I'm a little less of a thumb-sucking crybaby now, but listen, you know, I mean, that's part of being an alcoholic. You come in that way. You come in through the front door that way. Nothing wrong with being that. I was a proud thumb-sucking crybaby. I gave my sponsor something to work with. You know, he was, I never told you guys, oh God, I never told you guys the story about the crazy priest, did I? No? It's too late, I can't tell you the story. I'll tell you about the crazy priest. Remind me to tell you the story about the crazy priest. You know, you talk about a thumb-sucking crybaby. 7 years sober, I was a thumb-sucking crybaby. I got to tell you that story about the priest. But I had a lot of guys kicking my ass. A lot of sponsors telling me I was full of crap. Said, telling me, why don't you go out and drink? You know, things like that. So, you know, I mean, I had to, just like we all have to do, we all have to go through our 40 years in the desert. We all have to, you know, deal with life and deal with this stuff and read this stuff. It takes a long, you know, when you've been hardwired. Remember, I came in here when I was 31 years of age, you know, and I'm like a locomotive. I'm going 1,000 miles per hour. I'm self-will run riot. When you're hardwired to think a certain way, believe a certain way, act a certain way, let me tell you something. I was a bar drinker. You know what a bar drinker, I'll tell you what how a bar drinker like me thinks. Everybody's full of shit. You're full of shit. He's full of shit. You want some? I'm full of shit. It's all bullshit. Bar drinkers don't believe in nothing. God, I don't believe in nothing. I don't even believe in me. I believe in sex, drugs, and rock and roll. I believe in give me another drink. I believe in getting laid. I'm a bar drinker. I don't believe in anything. It's all a bunch of crap. That's me. That's a bar drinker. I don't know. Maybe you're different. Maybe you're a different type of alcoholic. You take a personality like that, who's out for himself, that doesn't believe in anything, doesn't trust anybody, you better do it yourself, because you believe in anybody, they're going to let you down, they're going to screw you. You know, it better be you, or you're going to be, you better have control, or else you're going to get hurt, because nobody's looking out for you, you're only looking out for yourself, you're feeling sorry for yourself. You take a person like that, you think because he picks up a white chip, all of a sudden that stuff goes away, and you're fine, and you're okay? I don't think so. That thinking sort of drags on for about 20, 25 years. And there's still vestiges of it, right? Right? You know? Is that a nervous laugh? Sure, you're laughing. You don't know what it's like. It drags on for 5, 10, 15, 20 years. You don't run away. You don't pick up a white chip and then all of a sudden it's not, you know, all of a sudden cured. You got to be. Let me tell you something. There's more than one surrender. There's more than one surrender. There's the surrender when you pick up the white chip. There's the surrender when you ask somebody to be your sponsor. There's the surrender when you join the group. There's the surrender when you start sponsoring other people. Everything you do in here that's different than you would normally do. There's the surrender when you come to meetings and listen to goofy guys like me and actually pay attention. That's sort of like a surrender. And you start saying, well, maybe this guy, there's surrenders all along the way. There's a surrender when you go up to your sponsor and start telling about all your problems, he says, shut up, why don't you do this? And you actually do it. When you start listening to other people. There's a surrender when you get down your knees and you say a third time. There is this is a constant surrender. It's constant, it's more. But that's the problem, it's more. You're 9 years sober and you say, what do I have to do? What do I have to do? I'm doing everything. And my son, you gotta do more. What do you mean more? More. I'm already going to 6 meetings or 7 meetings. Maybe you need to go to 10. I'm already sponsoring 3 people, 4 people. Well, maybe you ought to sponsor 10 people. I'm always doing service. Maybe you ought to be on relay. It's just more. I want to rest on my laurels. I want to get this thing. I want to get the diploma. I want to graduate so I can do what I really want to do, and that is chase women or whatever the heck I'm interested in doing. No. I got to stay close to him and perform his work well. It's just more until you've surrendered everything. You guys ever heard the term turning it over? When I was growing up in AA, they had a term. I'm just taking about 2 more minutes. They had a term called turning it over. You would turn something over. There would be something bothering you. And somebody would say, why don't you just turn it over? And you'd let it bother you for about 6 months or something like that, or 6 days or whatever it is. And then finally, you'd reach the point where you just tuckered yourself out. You couldn't do it. And somehow, it was such a strain because you wanted to wrestle it. You wanted to figure it out. You wanted to do something. How am I going to get the money? How am I going to do this? You do everything. You drive yourself nuts. You wouldn't. And then finally, in desperation, you would say, there's nothing I can do. I'm going to turn it over. Whatever happens is going to happen. If I die, I die. And then somebody will say to you, well, what happened with that thing with your dad? And I say, I turned it over. You ever turned something over? You remember what it was like before you turned it over? You were worried about it. You were talking about it at meetings. You were crying about it. You couldn't get to sleep at night. And then one day you turned it over, and it was okay. And guess what? It all worked out. But you had to go through all that crap to turn it over. And then after around 6 or 7 years, instead of taking 6 days to turn it over, it took like 6 hours to turn it over. And then after about 20 years, you know, it takes like, I don't know, an hour to turn it over, 2 hours to turn it over. And then all of a sudden, you know, it takes maybe only about 3 minutes to turn something over. Well, how about this? What do you think life would be like this? What about living a turned over life? What about not having to turn stuff over because it's already turned over? Already turned over. You know what it's like when things are already turned over? You'd be surprised. Anybody here been? Friday is my wedding anniversary. I'll be married 34 years. I'm 34 years sober. I'll be married 34 years. My sponsor said, don't make any major decisions. I was 3 months sober, I got married. I didn't think it was a big deal. But so I got married to this gal. So I've been married to her for 34 years. She's the devil incarnate. You know what I mean? I mean, trust me, you know. Men were not meant to really live with women. It's a whole different deal, you know? I love her. She's great. She's the best thing that ever happened to me because it's a whole long story. I'm not even going to go into that. But let me tell you something. You see, how do you deal with somebody when they say things like, "You're the worst husband in the world. You never do anything around here after you just, you know, clean the entire house and taken out the, you know," how do you deal with something? You see, if you're an alcoholic like me, the way you deal with it is you yell, you scream, you say, "I don't need this bullshit. I'm out of here. I don't need this kind of crap." You know what I mean? I'm gone. I need somebody who respects me and everything, you see? But when you live a turned over life, you've already turned her over because you realize it has nothing to do with you. You're just the largest object in the room. You know what I mean? There's nothing else to talk to. That was you're going to talk to the dog. And she says that stuff to you. You get to say things like, "Well, I think you're probably right about that. The number one worst husband in the world. No question about it, you know? I think I ought to get the..." What would be the punishment for that, sweetheart? A blouse? I can handle that. Just go straight to the punishment. See, when you use a turnover life, you don't take yourself so seriously. You know, you know how alcoholics, I don't know about you, alcoholics, you know, take things personal. Did you know that? They take things personal. They're in a traffic jam with 10,000 cars. They say, "Why is this always happening to me?" I mean, really, I can't believe this is happening to me again, you know? Alcoholics take everything personally. Well, it's already 9:05. I'm going to close. When did I start this thing? We started at 8 o'clock? That's it. It's over. Okay, thank you very much.
We have someone reading Why We Were Chosen.
I'm Keith, and I'm a recovering alcoholic.
Thank you.
God in His wisdom selected two men and women.